Three Lives by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 7. The great president slumped back in his luxurious swivel chair, clutching grimly at his chest. There was that pain again, that awful, nagging, gnawing pain which made him think that his chest was being squeezed in a vise. He sat back, gasping, wondering what he should do. Should he call the doctor, or go to the hospital, or should he stick it out for a little while longer? Mr. Hoagie McOggswasher, the president of Glittering Gizmos, was a man in deep trouble very similar to that which had terminated the life of his father. The firm, founded by his father, was prospering so much that Hoagie wished that his father could be with him to witness the success. But Hoagie leaned back in his chair and started groping for his amyl nitrate capsules. Breaking it in a paper handkerchief, he felt the fumes going into his chest, giving him relief. Relief for a time. With Hoagie's ailment, there would be no real relief until life itself terminated the pain. But amyl nitrate kept him going for the time, and he was grateful for it. He felt that his work was not finished yet. He thought of his father, long dead, thought of how they used to walk together more like two brothers than father and son. He glanced at his wide picture window with the tinted glass across the top. He thought of the time when his father had stood beside him and put his arm around his shoulder. Together they had looked at the factory building, and the father had said, "Hoagie, my boy, one day all this will be yours. Look after it. Look after it well. It's my brainchild. Hoagie, it will keep you in comfort and prosperity for all the days of your life." Then his father had sat down heavily in his chair, and, like Hoagie now, had clasped his chest with his two hands and groaned with the pain. Hoagie had really loved his father. He remembered how he sat across from his father one day on the desk, which seemed to Collars to be acres in extent. Highly polished, a wonderful desk indeed, hand-carved by an old craftsman in Europe. Hoagie had said, "Father, how do we get such a peculiar name? I can't understand it. Many people have asked me, and I've never been able to tell them. You've got some time this afternoon, Father. The board meeting went off well. Tell me what happened before you came to Canada." Father McOggswasher leaned back in his chair, the chair upon which Hoagie now sat, and lit an immense Havana cigar. Then, puffing comfortably, he swung his feet up onto the desk, folded his hands across his ample stomach, and said, "Well, well, my boy, V comes from Upper Silesia in Europe. V was de Juden, but your mutter and I was told that even in Canada there was discrimination against us Judes, so your mutter and I," V said, "well, we will take care of that real fast. We will become Catholics. They seem to have the most money, and they has the most saints to look after them. Your mutter and I, we looked around, and we talked of different names what we should have. And then I thought of your uncle's cousin on your mutter's side. Good man was he. He made good living, too. He was Jude, just like you and me, but he had made good living washing hogs. He got hogs all washed up real good and clean and proper. He scrubbed the petrol in the hides, and they come clean, just like a baby's backside. They had a rosy glow on them, just like a slapped baby's backside. And the judges, they always said, "Well, well, the hog, him must from a certain man have comed. They was so good and prettified." Hoagie's father had swung his feet down to the floor again, while he leisurely reached out for his special knife, which he had a spear point attached to it. With that, he jabbed the butt end of his cigar, which was not drawing any too well. Then, having got the smoke flowing as he wanted, he resumed his talk. "I said to mine Frau, 'Dat is vat we will do. We will call ourselves Hogwasher. That seems to be a good name, American continent-wise. De has de funny names there.'" He had stopped for a while and rolled a cigar about between his lips before continuing. "Mein Frau, she say to me, 'We should do something to make prettified up more Catholic.' So she say we got to have a Mac, like they do with the Irishers. The Irishers, they had the Mac on the name, which sort of keeps them out of storms. People say mit that Irish must be. So I said to myself, and I said to mein Frau at the same time, 'That is what we will do. We will call myself Mac Hogwasher, and from now on we have to be the Catholics.'" Again the old man had stopped while he ruminated a bit more. Hoagie always knew when his father was in a contemplative mood, because the inevitable cigar was rolled backwards and forwards between his parents' lips, and then there came a great burst of smoke again, and his father said, "Mine friends, I told of this, and they said to me, 'Saints aplenty you should have, special patron saint you should have, like they do with the Catholics in Ireland.' So I did not know what to have for saints. I never spoke no how to no saints. So my friend, he say to me, 'You want a good saint? Then a good saint for you, your patron saint, should be Saint Lucre.'" Hoagie had looked at his father in amazement and said, "Well, father, I've never heard of Saint Lucre. When I went to the seminary, the brothers there used to teach us all about saints, but they never taught me anything about Saint Lucre." Yeah, my boy," said Father McHogswasher. "Then I will tell you why the saint he got that name. Mein friend, he say to me, 'Moses,' he say, 'you always was one for running after the filthy lucre. You say to me many times, Moses, money has no smell. But others say he is running after filthy lucre. So what better saint could you have, Moses, than Saint Lucre?'" But now Hoagie shuddered as a fresh spasm of pain racked his chest. For the moment he thought he was going to die. He felt that his chest was being crushed, squeezed, the air being squeezed out of his lungs. But once again he sniffed at the amyl nitrate, and gradually the pain eased. Gingerly and, oh, so cautiously, he moved slightly and found that the main pain had ended. But he decided it would be a good idea to stop for a bit, put work aside for a bit, have a rest, think about the past. He thought again about his father. Years before, his father had started the business on what he called a shoestring. The father and the mother had left Upper Silesia after one of the annual pogroms there, and had come to Canada, where they had become landed immigrants. Father Moses found there was no work for him, so he went into farming for a time, acting as a farm laborer instead of the skilled jeweler for which he had been trained. One day he saw another farm laborer playing about with a small stone which had a hole in it. The man, on being questioned, had told him that it brought much peace of mind when he played with this stone, and so he kept it with him. And when the boss farmer told him off for being too slow or too dumb, he played about with this polished stone, and then calmness swept over him. Hoagie's father had thought about that stone for days, and then he came to a great decision. He got together all the money he could. He borrowed money, and he worked like a slave to get more. And then he started a little business called Glittering Gizmos. They made little things which had no earthly use at all, but most of them were gilded by the vacuum process, and people thought, when they had these golden objects in their pockets, that they became tranquil. A friend once asked him, "What is this thing, Moses? What good does it do?" Moses replied, "Ah, my friend, that is a good question. What is a glittering gizmo? No one knows. But they want to know, so they spends good money buying them to find out. No one knows what it is. No earthly use has ever been found for one. But we advertise it as new, and has now become a status symbol to own one. In fact, for a special charge, we will have a person's initials engraved on it. You must remember that here on this American continent, anything new is what they want. Anything old is garbage. Well, we takes garbage and we gild it up a bit to make it look prettified, and we advertise it as the latest thing. Guaranteed to do this and guaranteed to do that, but of course it doesn't do a thing. The buyer does the good by the way he or she is thinking, and if they think there is nothing in it, then they don't like to admit they have been conned. So they tries to sell the things to show others that have been conned also. I makes for myself quite a packet." "Good gracious, Moses," exclaimed his friend, "don't tell me that you're selling rubbish to the unsuspecting public." Moses McOgswasher had raised his gray eyebrows in mock horror and then said, "Goodness me, mine friend, you don't think I would be swindling the public, do you? Are you calling me a crook?" The friend laughed at him and replied, "Whenever I meet a Catholic who has the first name of Moses, I wonder what made him change from a Jew into a Catholic." Old Moses had laughed heartily and told his friend the story of his life, building up a business in Upper Silesia, being famed for good quality, being famed for fair dealing and low prices. And then he said, jovially, "It all went poof. The Russians came along and they took everything. They makes me a pauper. And then they turned me from mine house, and I was an honest man, giving good deals and selling genuine articles. So I turn myself around. I becomes a dishonest man, selling junk for high prices, and people respect me more. Look at me now, I have my own business, my own factory, my own Cadillac, and I have mine patron saint, Saint Lucre." He laughed aloud as he went to a little cabinet fixed to one corner of his office. Slowly he unlocked the door. Slowly he turned to his friend and he said, Come and see here." His friend laughed with glee as he jumped to his feet, crying out, "Moses, you're speaking the wrong language. You don't speak German now. You're supposed to be a Canadian citizen. You should be saying, 'Get a load of this, bud.'" He walked over to where old Moses was tantalizingly holding the cupboard door, barely ajar. Then, suddenly, the cupboard door was swung wide open, and the friend saw an ebony plinth, and upon the ebony plinth, the dollar sign, in gold, stood up, and on top of the dollar sign, there was also a halo. He looked at old Moses without comprehension, and Moses laughed aloud at his expression. "That is mein Saint Lucre," he said. "Filthy lucre is money. Mein Saint is clean dollars." But now Hoagy was feeling a lot better. He pressed his intercom button and called to his secretary, "Come in, Miss Williams, come in." A very businesslike young woman entered and sat demurely at the edge of the desk. "I want you to call my attorney. I want him to come here to see me. I think it's time that I made my will." "Oh, Mr. Hoagy," said the secretary in alarm, "you do look pale. Do you think I should get Dr. Johnson to come along to see you?" "No, no, my dear," said Hoagy. "I think I have been working too hard, and one can't be too careful, you know. So just call the attorney and ask him to come and see me at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning here, and that is all the business we'll do this afternoon." He gestured with his hand, and the secretary went out again, wondering if Hoagy McOgswasher had a premonition that he was going to die or something. Hoagy sat back in the chair, thinking of the past and the future as well, as he supposed his father had sat on numerous occasions. He thought of what he had heard from Miss Williams, and then his mind drifted to the life of Father McOgswasher. Miss Williams told Hoagy about how she had gone into the office and found Father McOgswasher sitting silent and somber at his desk. As she came in, he was looking up at the sky, watching wispy clouds as they sped over his factory buildings. Then he moved and uttered a deep, deep sigh. Miss Williams stopped and looked at the old man, seriously afraid that he was going to die in front of her. "Miss Williams," he had said, "mine car I should have already. Tell the chauffeur to come to the front right now. Home I should go." Miss Williams gave her urbane, businesslike acknowledgment, and Father McOgswasher sat back with his hands clasped against his ample paunch. Soon his office door opened, and Miss Williams came in again, looking with great concern as she saw him hunched up at his desk. "The car is at the door, sir," she said. "May I assist you with your coat?" The old man stood up somewhat shakily and said, "Oi, oi, Miss Williams, you think maybe too old I am getting, hey?" The secretary smiled and walked across to him, carrying his coat. Clumsily, he put his arms into the sleeves, and she moved around to the front and carefully pulled the coat down and then buttoned it for him. "Here's your briefcase, sir," she said. "I haven't seen your new Cadillac, you know. I will see you down to your car, if you don't mind." The old man grunted acquiescence, and together they moved into the elevator and down to the street. The uniformed chauffeur had jumped to attention and quickly opened the car door. No, no, my boy, no, no, I will sit in front with you for a change, said the old man, as he shuffled around and got into the front of the car. With a wave to Miss Williams, he settled and the chauffeur drove off. Mr. McOgswasher Sr. lived away in the country, some 25 miles distance from his office, and he looked about him as the car sped through traffic and out into the suburbs beyond, looked about him as though he had never seen the scenery before, or as though he were seeing it for the last time. In somewhat less than an hour, for the traffic was quite heavy, the car drew up in front of McOgswasher Mansion. Mrs. McOgswasher was at the door, waiting, because Miss Williams, like a good secretary, had telephoned Mrs. McOgswasher to say that she thought the boss was having an attack of something. Oh, Moses, I've been so worried about you this day, said Mrs. McOgswasher. I think you have been doing too much, maybe. Maybe we should have a vacation. You are seeing too much of that office. Old Moses had dismissed the chauffeur and walked somewhat warily into his house. It was the house of a wealthy man, but of a wealthy man who had not got too much taste. There were priceless antiques and garish modern things side by side, but somehow the furnishings and the furniture, old and new, blended together in that almost mystical way which old Jews from Europe had, so that instead of a hodgepodge, almost like a junk shop, the interior was quite attractive. Mrs. McOgswasher took her husband's arm and said, "Come and sit down, Moses. You look as if you could fall at any moment. I think I will send for Dr. Johnson." "No, no, Mama, no, no. We have things that we got to talk of before Dr. Johnson. We will call him," said Moses. Then he relapsed into his chair and put his head in his hands, thinking deeply. "Mama," said Moses, "do you remember the old religion? Jude's in our family religion. How come I don't call in a rabbi and have a talk with him? There are lots of things in my mind I should clear." The wife busied herself getting a drink for the old man, carefully putting in ice, then bringing the glass over to him. "But how can we go back to the Jewish religion when we are such good Catholics, Moses?" she asked. The old man mused upon it as he slowly sipped his evening drink, and then he said, "Well, well, Mama, when all the chips are down, no more a false front should we put up. We cannot return to the land of our fathers. We can return to our old religion. I think maybe a rabbi I should see." Nothing more was said for quite a time, but at dinner the old man had suddenly dropped his knife and fork with a clatter and leaned back in his chair, gasping. "No, no, Moses, enough of this I have had already," said his wife, running to the telephone. "Dr. Johnson, I call him now." Quickly, she ran her fingers down the automatic telephone number indicator and then pressed a button. The latest electronic marvel whirred and buzzed as the machine churned out the number of Dr. Johnson. After a very short interval, a voice had answered and Mrs. McOgswasher said, "Dr. Johnson, Dr. Johnson, so quickly you should come. My husband's so sick, with chest squeezings." The doctor, knowing that he had a very good paying patient, hesitated not one moment. "All right, Mrs. McOgswasher, I will be over within 10 minutes," he said. The woman put down the telephone and returned to her husband, sitting on the arm of the chair beside him. "Mama, Mama," said the old man, holding his chest between his two hands, "do you remember how we came from the old country? Do you remember how we came by the cheapest way possible, crammed together like cattle in pens? We've worked hard, Mama, you and me. We've had a harsh life, and I'm not sure that we did the right thing to become Catholics. We were born Judes. Judes we should always be. We should return, maybe, to the old religion." "But we cannot do that, Moses. We just cannot do it. Whatever would the neighbors say? We'd never live it down, you know. But I suggest we go away for a vacation, and perhaps you'll feel better then. I expect Dr. Johnson can suggest a nurse to go with us to look after you." She jumped up quickly at the sound of the doorbell. The maid was already on the way to the door, and within seconds, Dr. Johnson was ushered into the room. "Well, well, Mr. McHogwasher," said the doctor jovially, "and what is the matter? You have a pain in your chest? Oh, I expect it's another attack of angina. One of the big symptoms, you know, is a strong, strong feeling that one is going to die." Mrs. McHogwasher had nodded her head gravely. "Yes, doctor, he's had this feeling for some time, a feeling that he can't go on much longer, so I thought I should call you urgently." "Quite right, Mrs. McHogwasher, quite right. That's what we're here for, you know," said the doctor. "But let us get him up to the bed, and then I'll give him a thorough examination. I have with me a portable cardiograph, and we'll try it on him." Soon, old Moses had been ensconced in an immense double bed with the padded quilt in the old European fashion. The doctor soon gave him an examination, looking graver and graver as he did so, and then at last he said, "Well, I'm afraid you'll have to stay in bed for some time. You're a very sick man, you know. You've been burning the candle at both ends and in the middle as well, and at your age you cannot afford to do that." He closed the cardiograph machine, put away his stethoscope, and washed his hands in the luxurious adjoining bathroom. Then he shook hands with his patient, and together with Mrs. McHogwasher, walked down the staircase. On the ground floor, he beckoned to Mrs. McHogwasher, and he whispered, "Can we go into a private room to talk about it?" She led the way into the old man's study and shut the door. "Mrs. McHogwasher," the doctor said, "I'm afraid that your husband is very seriously ill. I'm afraid that if there's any more exertion, your husband will not last. What about your son Hoagie, Mrs. McHogwasher? Isn't he at college?" "Yes, doctor," replied Mrs. McHogwasher. "He is at Bally Old College." "If you think I should, then I will telephone him immediately and ask him to return. He's a good boy, a very good boy indeed." "Yes," replied the doctor, "I know he is a good boy. I've met him on quite a number of occasions, you know. But now, in my opinion, he should come back to see his father. I fear that it may be for the last time. I must impress upon you that your husband really needs nursing care day and night, and I suggest you may like to have me take care of it. I can send nurses for you." "Oh, yes, yes, doctor, yes, certainly. We can well afford it. We will have whatever you recommend." The doctor pursed his lips and pinched them sideways between finger and thumb, and then he looked down the sides of his nose and said, "Well, of course, I would have liked him in my nursing home. We could have cared for him very thoroughly in my nursing home. But for the moment, I rather fear that such a move might be ill-advised. We shall have to treat him here. I will send a nurse, and she will stay for 8 hours, and then another nurse will take over for 8 hours, and I will come and see him first thing in the morning. Now, I will write a prescription, and I will have the drugstore send along the medicine by special messenger, and you follow the instructions very carefully. Goodbye, Mrs. McHogwasher," said the doctor, and the doctor walked sedately to the door and out through the dining room to his car. For some time, Mrs. McHogwasher had sat with her head in her hands, wondering what she should do. But then she was roused from her soliloquy by the arrival of the maid. "The master's calling for you, madam," she said. Quickly, Mrs. McHogwasher rushed up the stairs. "Mama, mama, why for? We don't have no rabbi come," he asked. "A rabbi I should have fast. I have a lot that I should talk of, and maybe arrangements could be made for mine son or an old friend to recite the Kaddish." "My, my, Moses!" exclaimed his wife. "Do you really think you should have a rabbi? Don't forget that you're a professed Catholic. How will we explain to the neighbors that we've suddenly become Jews?" "But, Mama, Mama, how can I die in peace without knowing that I have someone to recite the Kaddish for me?" Mrs. McHogwasher stood in deep, deep thought, and then she said, "I know, I know, I have the solution. We will call in a rabbi as a friend, and after the rabbi has gone, we will call in our Catholic father, and in that way we shall be well covered with the two religions and our neighbors." The old man laughed and laughed until the tears came to his eyes and the pain started again. But when he recovered, he said, "Oi, oi, Mama, so you think so bad have I been altogether that I need to have an insurance so one of the two can make the best bid to get me up to heaven?" "Well, well, Mama, so it shall be, but for myself, the rabbi I should have real fast. And then he has gone, we can have the Catholic father. And in that way, we can be sure we have covered mine passing from two sides at once." "I have telephoned Hoagie, Moses," said Mrs. McHogwasher. "I've told him that you've had a little setback, and that I thought it would be a comfort to his father if he returned for a day or two. He's coming immediately." Hoagie sat back and thought of it all again. He relived it. For the moment his pain was forgotten, thinking of those bygone days, thinking of how the big car had raced through the chilly night, roaring through small hamlets and big towns. He remembered the startled expression on the face of a policeman as he jumped out of hiding somewhere and tried to flag down the speeding Hoagie, and then, as the car did not stop, the policeman raced for his motorcycle and tried to catch up, but to no avail. Hoagie had a good car, and Hoagie was a good driver. The policeman must have been a rookie, because he soon retired from the race. Hoagie remembered reaching his father's home. Dawn was just breaking, as away in the east there were the reds and blues and yellows of dawn flaring across the sky. Later that morning, after he had had a little rest, so that his father would not see how tired he had been, he went to see the old man. Father McOgwasher was in bed, wearing his yarmulke, the little skull cap which Orthodox Jews wear on certain occasions. About his shoulders he had his prayer shawl. "Hogi, my boy, I'm glad you've returned in time. I am a Jew, and you are a good Christian Catholic. You believe in doing good turns, my boy. So I want you do something for me. I want you recite the Kaddish, which, as you know, is a prayer for the dead. I want you recite in the old way, which is almost forgotten. That should not interfere with your Christian Catholic belief, my boy." Hogi hesitated. He had really taken to the Catholic belief. He absolutely believed the Bible and in the saints and all the rest of it. He believed that the Pope and the others of the hierarchy of the Catholic Church had divine powers, so how could he, a good Catholic, suddenly revert, even temporarily, to the religion of his fathers, the Jewish religion? The old man had been watching his expression, watching him closely, and then he sighed deeply and sank lower in his bed. "All right, my boy," said the old man, "I will not trouble you further, but I believe that we all goes the same way home. It doesn't matter at all if I'm a Jew and you're a Catholic. We all go the same way home. If he lives a good life, he gets a good reward that's coming to us. But tell me, my boy," he said with a faint smile, "why do Catholics fear death more than any other religion fears it? Why for are Catholics so opposed to all other religions and firmly hold to the belief that unless one is a Roman Catholic, no place in heaven there is for them? They must have bought all the tickets in advance, I suppose," said the old man with a laugh. Hogi groaned aloud as he said, "Father, Father, let me get one of the Holy Fathers here now. If you would be converted now, then I'm sure you would be considered for a place in heaven. As it is, as a Jew, you have no chance at all, Father. You'll find yourself lodged in hell, just like an old author is going to be. I have been reading some of his books lately, until one of the priests caught me with them, and, oh dear, I had to do penance, because I'd been reading a book by that fellow Rampa. In the hospital, some time ago, a very good Catholic sister wept over him, and said that he would go to hell, because he was a Buddhist. A Buddhist, mind. Can you imagine it?" Father McOgswasher looked at his son with compassion, with pity, and said, "My boy, since you've been away and since you've embraced the Catholic faith more closely, you are indeed becoming bigoted. Never mind, my boy. I will get one of my old friends, one who has been as a son to me, and I will have him recite the Kaddish, so as not to upset your faith." The old rabbi came to see Father McOgswasher, and they talked together for quite some time. The old man said to the rabbi, "My son is changed, so that possibly he is no longer my son. He would not read the Kaddish for me. He would not even tolerate talk of our religion. I'm going to ask you, mine friend, if you will recite the Kaddish for me." The rabbi placed his hands on his old friend's shoulders and said, "Of course I will, Moses, of course I will." But my own son is a very good man indeed, and I think it would be more meet if he did it instead. He's a young man of the same age group as that of your son, but I am, well, I'm one of your contemporaries, aren't I? Old Moses thought about it, and then smiled as he nodded acceptance, saying, "Yes, yes, that is a good suggestion, Rabbi. I will accept your advice, and your son, if he will, shall recite the Kiddush as if he were mine own son." The old man stopped, and there was silence in the room for a few moments until he spoke again. "Rabbi," he said, "this author, Rampa, do you know about him? Have you read any of his books? Mine son say that many Catholics have been forbidden to read his books. What are they about?" The rabbi laughed, and he replied, "I have brought one of them for you, my friend. It tells much about death. It gives one great encouragement. I will ask you to read it. It will give you peace of mind. I have recommended it to many, many people, and yes, I know about him. He's a man who writes the truth. He's a man who's been persecuted by the press, or more accurately, by the media. There was quite a little plot about it some years ago. Some of the newspapers claimed that he was the son of a plumber. But to my own knowledge, to my own definite knowledge, I know that to be untrue. But I do not understand their point of view. What is there to be ashamed of in being the son of a plumber, if he had been, that is? Their Savior, Christ, was the son of a carpenter, we are told. And then many of the saints of the Catholics came from very humble beginnings. One of their saints, Saint Anthony, was the son of a swineherd. Some of the saints have been robbers who have been converted. Oh, no, the man tells the truth. As rabbi, I get to hear a lot. I get many letters, and yes, the man is true. But he got into bad odor with a group of people and has been persecuted ever since, and none of the media has ever offered him an opportunity of explaining his own side of the question. "But why does he have to explain anything?" asked old Moses. "If he has been framed, as is so often the case, why couldn't he do anything about it at the time? Why bother now?" The rabbi looked sad and said, "The man was in bed with coronary thrombosis when the press people descended in quantities on his place of abode. It was thought he was going to die, and the press became even more virulent as there was no one to dispute their story. But enough of that for now. We have to deal with you. I'll go and talk to my son." The days went on. 3 days, 4 days, five, and on the fifth day, Hoagy went into his father's room. His father was leaning back against the pillows. His eyes were half open. His mouth was gaping wide. His jaw sagging upon his chest. Hoagy rushed to his father and then hastily went to the door and called to his mother. The funeral of Moses McCogwasher was modest, quiet, and peaceful. Eventually, after 3 weeks, Hoagy went back to college and finished his instruction so that he could take over his father's business. End of chapter 7.